ለተባበረን ለቴክኒክ ባለሙያ አሰፍ መስኮቪች ስካን ይደርሰው ሻባት ሻሎም
listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
Good evening and Shabbat Shalom. It's 8 p.m. on Friday, the 19th of April. This is Mark Weiss with a roundup of the top news at this hour. An Iranian Air Force base near Isfahan, 350 kilometers south of Tehran, was attacked pre-dawn this morning. According to the American ABC news channel, Israeli aircraft fired three missiles from outside of Iran at an air defense radar site near Isfahan, protecting the Natanz nuclear facility. Israel is maintaining silence and has not commented. Iran tried to downplay the severity of the event, saying there was no damage, but made it clear there would be no retaliation. Senior Iranian officials told the New York Times that the attack was carried out by small drones, possibly launched from inside Iran, and that its radar systems had not detected unidentified aircraft entering Iranian airspace. The official Tasnim news agency denied there had been a foreign attack in the Isfahan district or anywhere else. Flights in Isfahan, Shiraz, and Tehran were cancelled for a few hours. A U.S. administration official told CNN that the U.S. had received prior notification of the Israeli attack. He said that the administration had not expressed an opinion, in other words, had neither approved nor tried to prevent the attack. An Israeli official told the Washington Post that the strike was intended to signal to Iran that Israel had the ability to strike inside the country. Isfahan province is the home to several nuclear facilities, including the Natanz Uranium Enrichment Plant. The International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed that there was no damage to Iran's nuclear sites following the attack. Foreign ministers from the G7 said on Friday they would continue to work to prevent the conflict between Israel and Iran escalating. National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir suggested in a social media post that Israel's reported attack was too limited. He uploaded a one-word post in Hebrew, the word dardele, which means feeble.
Hatra'a. Sderot Ibim Nir'am.
That's a rocket warning for the area around Sderot. Iran's state-affiliated news agency commented that Ben-Gvir's reaction means the authorities in Israel are making fools of themselves. The Syrian Defense Ministry said on Friday that Israel also struck air defense sites in the country's south overnight, resulting in material damage. In other news, families of hostages tonight blocked the main Tel Aviv highway. One of the protesters was hurt after being hit by a car. The U.S. and the European Union on Friday imposed sanctions on Bensi Gopstein, a prominent far-right activist and advisor to National Security Minister Ben-Gvir, along with three other right-wing activists and two far-right NGOs. Four Palestinian terrorists, including an Islamic Jihad battalion commander, were killed during an IDF raid in Tulkarm in the northern West Bank on Friday. That's the news. This is Mark Weiss wishing you Shabbat Shalom from Jerusalem.
You are listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
Good evening and Shabbat Shalom. It's Friday, the 19th of April. This is Mark Weiss with a roundup of some of the top culture stories in the news this week. As Passover approaches, families of hostages held in Gaza face the acute pain of their loved ones' absence. In a briefing hosted by Media Central, three grandchildren of elderly hostages spoke about their beloved grandfathers and issued a call for their and all the hostages' release. Among those who spoke was Noam Safir, age 20, of Eilat, whose grandfather, Shlomo Mansour, an 86-year-old Holocaust survivor and the oldest hostage in captivity, was abducted from his kibbutz, Kisufim.
I, Noam Safir, and the granddaughter of Shlomo Mansour, the oldest hostage held in Gaza and the only one from kibbutz Kisufim. Shlomo was born in Iraq in 1938 and is recognized as a Holocaust survivor. During his time in his hometown, when he was only 3 years old, he went through the Farhud massacre of 1941, which was the Iraqi Jews' Holocaust that happened during the Jewish holiday Shavuot. The Nazi anti-Semitism inspired this Holocaust, in which the Muslims attacked the Jews by murdering, raping, and slaughtering people, cutting organs of babies, throwing babies into water wells in front of their parents, kidnapping kids and babies, injecting poison into sick Jewish people in hospitals, and more. In this massacre, hundreds of Jews were killed and thousands were injured. In this massacre, the terrorists broke into my grandfather's house and he witnessed as they hit his parents, killed his dog, wrecked his house and took the valuables and skewered the neighbor's baby after playing with him. He himself hid in the roof and cried. On October 7th, he went through a second Holocaust as Hamas terrorists barged into his and his wife's house while shooting the door and the walls and asked for their car keys. Shlomo, my grandfather, was handcuffed, beaten, and kidnapped in his own car from his home while still wearing his sleepwear in front of his wife Mazal, my grandmother, who managed to bravely escape to the neighbor's safe room. Since then, there is no information about his physical and mental state. Shlomo made Aliyah at the age of 13 in 1951 and moved to Kibbutz Kisufim at the age of 16, where he met Mazal and settled down there. He is the oldest sibling of six siblings, the father of five children, and the grandfather of 12 grandchildren. He is a known carpenter at the kibbutz and a very welcoming and loving person. He is the happiest man I know, and I never saw him without a smile on his face. Every time I went with my family to visit our grandparents at the kibbutz, my grandpa was always welcoming us with the widest smile and the biggest hug, always wandering around the kibbutz with us, excited to just be with us and show us around. He was always buying us ice cream and playing with us, making toys for us and creating with us. The last holiday I celebrated with him was Rosh Hashanah, which was in September. And the one thing that I'll be missing this Passover is him. During holiday dinners, he sits at the head of the table and makes sure everyone is well and eating. And if someone seems uncomfortable, he always turns to them and talks with them so that no one would feel alone. But this year, next week on Passover, his seat will be empty. And the happiness he had spread every year will turn into disturbing silence. I am devastated. My happiness is gone. And there's nothing I fear more than that the happiest man I know would be forever sad when he returns from captivity. My grandfather marked his 86th birthday on March 17th. He is the oldest hostage in captivity. He also missed his 60th wedding anniversary, which was on March 1st. Way back in November, my grandma cried in fear he'll miss their anniversary. And sadly, it has happened. I cry out Shlomo's cry, who's going through this hell all over again. He should live the life he has left to live, surrounded by his loved ones. All I wish is for him and all the other hostages to return home safely. Let our loved ones go. Let my grandpa go. 194 days is too much. They should all be home with their loved ones. I am thanking you for being here and letting me tell the story of my grandfather. Dear Grandpa, please remain hopeful. I hope you are able to spread your light on the darkness around you. I hope we will soon be able to celebrate together.
Noam Safir, granddaughter of 86-year-old Shlomo Mansour, the oldest hostage in captivity. The ongoing war in Gaza has exacerbated food insecurity among vulnerable populations in Israel, due, among other reasons, to the significant blow sustained by the agriculture sector. Since the outbreak of the war, the food rescue organization Leket Israel, the National Food Bank, has worked not only to provide food for those in need, but also to support hard-hit farmers. With the approach of the Passover holiday, Leket Israel founder and chairperson Joseph Gittler spoke to reporter Nomi Segel about the most acute needs at this time.
Can you give us a snapshot of food insecurity in Israel from the different components at this time?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for having me on. Look, I think we're now 6 months since the war started, so I would say things are have started to normalize a little bit, meaning outside of the north and the hardest hit areas next to the Gaza border, a lot of people have moved back to their homes, which means for the Lekets of the world to work with local partners, a lot of those local partners are now back in business, and so we can serve food through them again, whereas over the past few months, we've had to hustle to serve the poor where they are, because certainly their situation did not improve because of the war. Another major difference, just to add for Leket, is our normal activities, which is rescuing excess crops and excess cooked meals, went almost to zero in the weeks and months after October 7th. And while not completely back to normal, we're still purchasing a hefty amount of fruits and vegetables. A lot of our normal rescue activities have returned. So a little bit of normalization for the time being, which is good, especially now when there's always so much increased demand around Passover.
The war has also impacted farmers themselves. Certainly, they were having a lot of difficulty working the fields. There has also been a return to that in some areas, including in the Gaza periphery. Has Leket been part of those efforts with volunteers coming and helping out?
Sure. We've been super involved. We've placed 80,000 volunteers since October 7th, primarily working in the south. More than that, we've paid for over 2,000 buses since October 7th, whenever it's been safe. Now there's no more of a permission from the army, at least over the last couple of months. But we've worked closely hand in hand with the farmers and the army to get volunteers down there. We've provided debit cards to farmers who've been hard hit. And now we just started a large program together with Strauss Elite, where we'll be providing millions of dollars in grants to hard-hit farmers who need to buy, let's say, a new pickup truck. Their truck was damaged by rocket fire, or they don't have the money to buy seeds. So we're really doing everything to help farmers. We're normally, really, frankly, farmers just help Leket by giving us their excess crops. It's been a 180-degree turn, with the biggest and most important piece being that we've bought tens of millions of pounds of fruits and vegetables that farmers were having trouble selling just because of temporary changes in the market. You know, no tourism, and if you sell to the hotel trade, you might have gotten crops stuck that you couldn't sell. Leket came to the rescue for many farmers.
That connects to my next question. From your perspective and connections with this sector, how were they impacted? You mentioned some of the points. What about simply the harvesting of the crops? This is from a perspective of harvest waste.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you have things that were never harvested, waste, and that was primarily for security reasons. Let's take the entire north, where essentially farming has been put on hold since October 7th. In the south, there was short-term damage in that sense that you couldn't harvest. A lot of that has been fixed by now. The bigger, longer-term issue in the south was fields that were damaged by rocket fire and then fields that were damaged by military, like my son in his tank, driving his tank over fields. And so now that's a big job for farmers and the government to rehabilitate those fields. And you're talking about tens of thousands of dunams that were damaged. And that's an impact on our food security, food pricing, imports, and we can go down the line. It's just the repercussions are massive.
So where do you see, where does Leket see the most acute needs and what can be done or what should be done about them?
Okay, so I think the most acute need is going to be with farmers on the northern border, where basically they've been knocked out of work completely. That's simply going to, they're just going to need money to survive. And I'll say more than that. We need to be able to convince farmers in the north and farmers who've been hard hit elsewhere that we care about them, that we love them, that we want them to continue farming, which is often a difficult business because the state of Israel, as we know, stands always in a very tricky place, the history of the Jewish people. We need to have our own food supply. And so private individuals, the government, amutot, need to come together to make sure that farmers feel that if they get back into this, once things calm down, that they're not going to be let down and have financial issues. So that could be cash transfers. That could be interest-free loans, government support, maybe canceling debt, all that kind of stuff we need because our food security issues in this country are different, sadly, I would say, than many other countries in the world.
And that's from a policy perspective. From an individual's perspective, what can people do to help?
Okay, so I think one great way to help, besides volunteering when we come, we need endless volunteers still in the South primarily. Leket is and will continue to raise funds for this farmer grant program. And I think that is a great use of stuck up charitable dollars now because that money will go to help keep farmers on their feet, either by buying their excess crops that they can't sell or by helping them buy products that they need or vehicles or tractors, because we need to show them the love and keep them in business for our own sake, frankly.
And what about families? How acute is the need during these times?
So look, I think happily our unemployment continues to remain relatively low. Most people are working. Wages have stayed pretty consistent, which is good. But food prices, and this is really the bummer in Israel, food prices here were always more expensive than the rest of the OECD, and they've become more so since the war started and oil prices have gone up and countries haven't been selling to us. And so it's made food specifically more difficult for those that even a few percent change in price has a big impact on. So there's a lot of need, a lot of demand, and we're going to push very hard. We have less than a week till Passover. We're going to do whatever we can to get as much food into the system. And of course, I invite your listeners to help us do that.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Naomi. Happy and hopefully quiet holidays to everyone.
Leket Israel's Joseph Gittler. The prophet Miriam's tambourine, a symbol of the exodus out of Egypt, is the inspiration for an artistic project planned at Hostages Square in Tel Aviv to raise awareness of the hostages in Gaza with a message of unity, underscoring the role and responsibility women place in the effort. An initiative of creator activist Tali Dvir Livnat. Posters gathered from various demonstrations and painted yellow are being used to erect a giant 3-meter-wide drum, the Drum of Hope. The gathering also called for a special Seder for the return of the hostages and discussion circles. The event, originally planned for this past Sunday, was rescheduled due to Iran's aerial attack on Israel. Before the postponement, reporter Nomi Segal heard more about the project from Dr. Eliza Lavie, a former Knesset member and founder of the 120 Women Leadership Council, which is behind the initiative.
So Sunday we are going to be together in the hostages area in Tel Aviv, and we'll join by the liberation of the Drum of Hope. Women of the forum and women that will join us will work a lot with brave the families and in the surrounding settlements during the war. And we asked ourselves, you know, just before Pesach, the first Pesach, that we are sitting together, all the family, and many families, you know, their relatives, sons, boys, children, fathers are still in Hamas hands, half a year. How can we sit together? There are so many questions to ask, you know, and the issue of this evening. The main mitzvah is not to clean the house. The main mitzvah is to sit together and tell our story. And how can we tell our stories with so many questions around and no answer? And then we said to ourselves, let's sit together and think about Miriam and the hope and the drum and brings leadership of women, women's tools, actually our forums, a new forum that we established a year ago, because we found ourselves, many women, without understanding the situation. How come that we became enemy? We don't think the same, but how come that we can't work together anymore? What happened? And when we saw all around, we said to ourselves, all the time we are saying, you know, we women, we have the power and leadership, so let's sit together and see if really, even though that we are not the same, we can sit together, women from settlements and women that are want peace now and women from Tel Aviv and religious and secular, Sephardic, Ashkenazi, from the center and from East and West, sit together. And thank God we sat together, and took us like 4 or 5 months to learn again how to listen to each other. And after half a year that we travel everywhere and we made our journey, October the 7th came, and all of us worked together, and we were everywhere and went to the families that lost their relatives and to the hospitals and helped many, many, many people and families. And now, just before Pesach, we, as I said, ask ourselves, what are we going to do? So we invite everyone to come Sunday afternoon, 5:30, to make together drum of hope, and then to sit together in circles and panel and discuss how can we make it together, hold hands, and bring the answers to the questions that we can't solve. And more than that, about our experience as a woman, what can we do more to bring more women to the places that are making the decisions? It's not enough women, not as feminist point of view, more bring another views and another perspective table. We see the results, we see the situation. So we invite leaders from several organizations, women organizations, to sit together and think. And after, we are going to sit around long table, only with a long white table map, and reading the Haggadah, but not the Haggadah that you're familiar with, the Haggadah that we brought memories and songs and writing from women that wrote very ancient materials from the Holocaust and from the Inquisition and from other periods, that women ask questions about redemption, about a situation like this. We will remember and remember our brothers and sisters that are not here with us. And all of us will pray and ask for better time. And, you know, every Passover we finish the Seder with Shana Abba Yerushalayim, and next year in Jerusalem. And this year it's another meaning. And we need to speak about it and make more people be aware.
Is the idea about building bridges among these various different sectors who come together in this forum, or is it also thinking about actionable steps that can be taken to raise the issues?
We need to make the change. And unfortunately, in the last year and before, we, the women, we didn't work together because the ideological point of view was much more stronger than the feminist point of view. When we don't work together as a nation, as a people, as women, so first we are losing the positions, the control, and when we don't work together and we don't even think where to be, you know, I used to be in some other organizations, but I think that what happened last year made a huge change, and we need to come back to understand that we need to be united again. So in this event, we call it the Chatzuyot, means that we are not one, and we need to work on the fact that half a year we are in a war, and half people, half war, and this unique performance that will be held in the Chatufim Square, it's a huge lifting drum that will be built from protest signs and will echo the sound of the cry of the breakup for the people that are not with us. And actually, Miriam, the prophet, and Miriam, one of the leaders in the desert, Miriam that took the drum with her. And, you know, always I'm asking myself, how come that she had the drum in the desert? And answer is that in the night, you know, in the night, the horrible night that they left Egypt, and without knowing here and there, she remembered she was remembering to take the drum, because she knew that this is her tool, leadership tool. And even in the darkness time, always there is a light, and you have, and all of us have to remember it. And the drum remind the light that Miriam saw in that night. And she knew that in the future it will be time to celebrate and to sing and to dance. And all of us need to think about it. And this, you know, opportunity Sunday afternoon to think about the situation and to be aware of the ramification that not all the time it's time to blame one each other. Sometimes it's the time to take responsibility. So this event that is open for everyone will speak mm-hmm. about our responsibility in these days as women to take the change.
Dr. Elisa Lavie, founder of the 120 Women Leadership Council. Israel Prize laureate Naomi Polani, the iconic singer, actress, music producer, and choreographer, known for her career that was intertwined with the history of the state, died this week, aged 96. Born in Tel Aviv, Polani joined the Palmach in the 40s and founded and performed in the Palmach's entertainment troupe. She continued to create and direct army bands after the founding of the state and was known as the mother of IDF bands. She was awarded the Israel Prize for Theatre and Music in 2019. In 1960, she founded the group Hatarnagolim, the Roosters, with several former members of the Nachal troupe. Here is one of their biggest hits, Yossi, My Successful Kid.
Baharom zorachat Ima el Yossi Bna sholachat Lechavek bakbuk chalav Lech yashar Al tishkach Yossi Yelet sheli mutzlach Yossi Basdera posseach ופתאום אורות עיניו אז הופרסו לפניו גור כלבים יסכן צולע הוא חובק בשתי ידיו
ima mechaka babayit Efo yosi en chalam Ach hine hayelet baim Ma ze Chomet shel kablam Matana hebet ilach Oy li Yelet sheli muslach Shemesh b'marom zorachat Ima et Yossi b'na sholachat Lecha v'na li kikar Lechem cham Ach al tishka Yossi Yelet sheli muslach Hasera elav koretzet Betashuv kofzot enav Roashot mognot oznav Mabuchit ktana notzetzet Hu osef el sifdotav Ima mechaka babayit Efo yosi lechem ein Ach hine hayelet baim Mazer Yossi menagen
Mabuchit heveti lach
Oy li Yelet sheli muslach
Shemesh b'marom zorachat Ima et Yossi na sholachat Lefachot have zeitim זה הכל, אך אל תשכח
יוסי, ילד שלי מוצלח הסדרה לוחשת יוסי הנה שוב רוקדות עיניו מה נחפזו לפניו
מרח אדמוני, היופי
Ima mechaka babayit Oy li yosi zayit ein Ach hine hayelet baim Ma ze Lach hakol eten Ki haperach hu shelach Oy li Yelet sheli muzlach Rek habayit ein chalav
Lechem ein veluka zayit
אך מלא מלא הבית זמר מפוחית ופרח ונביחות כלבלה
The upcoming Passover holiday is a great excuse to get out into nature and enjoy some of Israel's natural beauty, particularly now as spring is in the air. Keren Kayemet Yisrael, the Jewish National Fund, has readied its forests for visitors. We spoke with Michael Ben Abu, director of the Israel Fundraising Department of the Keren Kayemet Yisrael, the Jewish National Fund, about some suggested places to visit and events.
What can you recommend for Israelis to do?
Basically, we offer a spring festival at the KKL Kayemet Forest with wide range of Israeli and Passover-related experiences, music, happenings, workshops, and all kind of activities for the entire family, which is mostly targeted for the families with children, mm-hmm. but not only.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that all activities are free of charge, yet one has to sign up in advance at our toll-free number, which is Kavlaya, the forest line, which is 1-800-350-550.
So okay. It's 1-800-350-550. Where is this? All over the country or in certain specific locations?
It's all over the country. We try to cover the south, the central area of Israel, and the north, of course. And let's start with the variety of the happenings which are taking place. At Chof HaKarmel, mm-hmm. at HaKarmel shoreline, We have an activity with visiting the cave trail, walking tour, where the Neanderthal man was there, so it would be an interesting tour, walking tour. We have at La Vie Forest, we have at Parc Ayerben, in which we'll have a theater play for children about the electricity making, because this is where Ram Narayan, where the first PowerPoint plan was created. In the central area, we have a Shemesh picnic area and the Givat Yeshayahu, which is going to be a unique activity with archaeology and the history workshop with making mosaics, etc.
Really? Where? That Givat Yeshayahu, the Moshav, and the Elah Valley?
We have our offices, our regional offices, we're the headquarters of the local forest, and this is where it's going to be.
Nice.
At Ilanot Botanical Garden, which has over 350 species of trees, we will have activities related to Pesach. And also at the Hulda Forest, we have the music concert at night. And so this is also not only for families with children. In the south, we have some unique activities. This time, with Gilat, at the Eshel Pesach happenings, where we will have the ability for children to re-experience Exodus or Yetziat Mitzrayim.
Nice.
Coming out of Egypt, we will play the entire Yetziat Mitzrayim.
Okay.
And, of course, it's a holiday of freedom, Chag HaFirut. And what will be also offered is the Mimuna festivity at Ofakim Park, where the children will be able to bake pitas and mofletas in forest. And basically, it's a lot of fun and giving the opportunity for the families with children to enjoy. And this is not only for children, because we offer a lot of guided tours. All the information can be found at Kavlaya, the forest line, which is 550. And of course, you can find the information in our website, which is kkl.org.il.
Excellent. So I see that you spoke about a whole plethora of places and venues all around the country. What about the Gaza periphery? Is JNF doing anything around there?
Well, I spoke about Gilat, Bet Eshel, and also Ofakim.
Okay.
We try to avoid offering activities for the security reasons, obvious security reasons. So not in the Otef necessarily, no.
Okay, so these events you're talking about, the mosaic making event and other music, what days are it happening? Is it happening just on the Wednesday and Thursday of Chol HaMoed, or is it also during
Chol HaMoed and the seventh day of Pesach, where Mimuna is celebrated, which became, entire national holiday. And where we can start to make the dough, so they would be baking pitas and mofletas. So,
And what about on the holiday itself and in the Sabbath?
We do not offer activities organized for Shabbat.
But the parks are open, yes?
The parks are open, and there will be supervisors from, foresters. Forest rangers with making sure that everything is kept, but we do not offer on Shabbat or holiday itself activities.
And how many people you're expecting to visit the JNF parks?
Usually it's hundreds and thousands of people, and I believe that, with the nice weather and hoping that everything would be calm and peaceful, they would be over hundreds of people.
That sounds fascinating. That's great. Thanks, Michael, for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Michael Ben Abu, the Israel Fundraising Department of the Keren Keyamet Israel, the Jewish National Fund. In response to the heightened security situation, the Ministry of Aliyah and Integration has expanded the hours of the emotional support hotline for new immigrants that it operates in cooperation with the emotional first aid organization Iran. The hotline, whose number is *3201, provides psychological assistance in five languages: Russian, Amharic, English, French, and Spanish. Reporter Nomi Segel heard more from Dr. Shiri Daniels, National Director of Counseling at Iran.
First of all, how have the past 6 months impacted the work of Iran?
Well, the last 6 months, we experienced something that we never experienced before, although Iran has been around for more than 53 years, and we've been through wars, but we never have been through something like that. We see a spike in distress calls, in anxiety, in grief, in loss, 950% rise in calls related to trauma and loss. And in general, it's not only the rise in calls, it's also the level of distress. Calls there on the 7th of October, we got calls from people actually hiding in the fields, running away from terrorists trying to murder them, people who experienced extreme disasters and viewed sites that find it very difficult to get out of their mind in the last 6 months to come, and probably will have to deal with that in the future, not only short term.
And in the months that have followed, have the types of calls shifted as the situation has continued?
Well, we see that as months go by, we see a rise in calls relating to depression and loneliness, which at the beginning were mainly calls around anxiety and trauma. We see a rise in calls that have to do with our personal relationships, with loved ones, with our kids, with our parents, with family members and spouses. So we see a shift in call, but still the main topics remain anxiety and trauma, and especially when the future is we have so much uncertainty about the future. We don't know when this war is going to end. Are we at the last phase, or maybe we are just in the beginning? And this causes a lot of distress in all of us. We see distress in children and teenagers, in their parents, in the elderly, with soldiers, reserve soldiers and their family members. So we could easily say that it's the Israeli society at whole.
Now, is the purpose of Iran and its hotline to provide, as you mentioned, emotional first aid? This is an immediate crisis as a hotline. Are there also recommendations or activities that it engages for follow-up treatment?
Well, sometimes there are. We have to remember that our needs in emergency and disaster situations are divided into three basic types: the basic physical needs, the need for information, and we see how all of us react when we don't have information to hold on to, and the psychosocial needs. And here Iran comes in as the need for emotional support, and we could help by listening and providing emotional support without judgment or criticism, by legitimizing emotion and normalizing the experience as a normal reaction to an abnormal situation, by also enlisting available support sources to provide further treatment when relevant, and also by identifying situations of extreme distress and referral for treatment in the future or in the present when needed.
Now, among the groups that Iran provides specific service to is to new immigrants in their language. This is in a cooperative effort with the Ministry of Aliyah and Integration. Has there been an uptick in calls to this hotline?
Yes, there is a rise in calls and online contacts with Olim because we know that Aliyah itself can be traumatic. And now going through a war without support systems that are more available for Israelis who were born here. So we provide support by professionals in five languages, in English, in Russian, in Amharic, French, and Spanish. And the service is active usually 5 hours a day, and now we see a need to expand this service, which, as you said, is with the collaboration of the Ministry of Immigration, who saw the need a year ago to provide accessible and available psychological assistance in the mother tongue of new immigrants.
So are there additional hours now that the hotline will be available?
Yeah, we opened today the hotline and online service at 6 in the morning, and we are going to be here for at least 12 hours. We are taking track of the developments, and we are going to increase our availability in order to answer the volume of calls and the level of high distress that everyone is experiencing now.
Given the most recent developments from last night with the Iranian attack, drone attack on Israel, was there a flood of calls coming into the hotline?
Yeah, there were a lot of calls regarding anxiety from the unknown. Parents who wanted to share their emotions and thoughts, people who had anxiety attacks and wanted us to help calm them down, and also people who wanted to ask how to speak to their kids, how to calm them down, and with their advice and support that they got, they found themselves more capable of being there for their loved ones.
So what is the number for the new immigrant support line of Iran, and what hours will it be operating?
Well, the number is *3201 or online via Iran's website. And we are here now for 10 to 12 hours daily. And I would like to invite everyone listening to join us and not to stay alone with the distress. We are here for you in your language. And maybe it's also an opportunity to tell whoever is listening to try to stay active, to stay together, to help others and not to stay alone. Because sharing our thoughts and emotions helps tremendously to deal with this, with these difficult times.
Dr. Shiri Daniels, Director of Counseling at Iran. The support hotline number for immigrants is *3201. The website is iran.org.il. Thanks for listening. This is Mark Weiss wishing you Shabbat Shalom from Jerusalem.
שמיים בדרך Bani lo piramidos. שחבד בכלב שנשך לחתול שטרף את הגדי שאבינו הביא וזו הבינה שח לחתול שטרף את הגדי שאבינו ושחט את השור ששתה את המים שכיבו את האש ששרפה את המקל שחבד בכלב שנשך לחתול שטרף את הגדי שאבינו הביא ובמלאך המוות והרג את השוחט ששחט את השור ששתה את המים שכיבו את האש ששרפה את המקל שחבד בכלב שנשך לחתול שטרף את הגדי שאבינו הביא Zavina va betreize Khad gadiya khad gadiya Ma pisomat shara khad gadiya Aviv od lo igiya u pesach lo ba U ma ishtana lach ma ishtana Ani ishtaneiti li hashana די שלב היום אני נמר וזאב תורף הייתי כבר יונה והייתי צפי היום איני יודעת מי אני וזאבי